Dubs here. Hey guys, welcome back to At the Reactor Weekly.
This is week three.
Yeah.
Yeah. When does week three start? What is it? Today's February 16th. So we're covering the 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th. What's happening tonight?
Cool. Well, if you're a game developer, if you're interested in games at all, this is a pretty awesome week to come hang out at the Reactor. Tonight on Tuesday at 8 o'clock, we have an SF game dev meetup night. So there's going to be some game demos. It's going to be a chill, like probably a more relaxed meetup group. And then on Thursday night, come back for more gaming with Playcrafting, and there will be like somewhere between 40 and 60 people demoing like their games in an expo style around the room, so that's going to be pretty sweet. So this week is basically all games all the time, at least for Tuesday and Thursday.
And they've got a meetup group for meetup.com for the SF Game Dev demo night, and then you can register on Eventbrite to come to the...
For the Playcrafting for the Thursday night. So just check out our website, and all those links are there.
Cool.
That sounds awesome.
What else is going on? Any progress on the Surface Hub?
Surface Hub, unfortunately, is still in the box. We're waiting to get the final approval to decommission a wall and rebuild it with those steel beams, but coming soon.
So that is the word. They're going to take down a wall and put in steel beams.
That's it. They're going to completely demo one of the walls here in this room, and progress report coming soon.
So we have a Surface Hub. It's just in a box.
Yes. Right now, you just draw on it with markers.
Sharpie Surface Hub. Did you guys celebrate President's Day?
You know what? I did. I did some presidential cleaning up over the weekend of my house. How about you, Deb?
No, I didn't really do much.
We had an event, though, at the Reactor.
We did have an event last night. We had a .NET meetup, and that was kind of cool.
So here we go, celebrating the holidays with meetups.
With meetups.
Yeah.
Cool. What do you think Andrew Jackson's favorite tech company was? Or would be?
Well, he was obviously partners with Edison on, you know, some of those inventions they were coming out with.
Are you talking about Thomas Jefferson? No, who are you talking about? Andrew Jackson?
There might have been a different time frame there, but time out for history.
Light bulbs?
Do we need to bring this? What? Do we need to find out the answer? Do we need to bring this?
Yeah, let's figure it out.
I think we can find out.
Andrew Jackson?
And if it has to do with light bulbs, you're going to owe me lunch.
Let's see. Andrew Jackson was the 7th president of the United States. My teacher always talked fondly of him, but then described all the terrible things he did. So it's always been this interesting person in my mind.
Is Andrew Jackson even part of what we celebrate on President's Day?
Do we only celebrate an exclusive group of presidents on President's Day?
If you have a dollar bill, you are celebrated. And that's if you're on a piece of currency, and you are president.
Well, Jackson's got the $20 bill.
That's true.
I don't know, so he might be the one. But, like, the Seminole Wars and, like, the Native American stuff, not
our finest.
I wonder what his favorite tech company was.
Or, like, I feel like Abe Lincoln would have liked...
Like, somebody who could make, you know, like, a new invention to, you know, like, the wool, you know, to do wool or, you know, a new milling process or something. Mm.
Do you think they were, like, aware of that, like, of brands and stuff way back when?
Historical. I mean,
I think it was a lot easier to brand it. It was probably like somebody's last name,
or
a stamp. You know, you just bump branded.
These are the finest barrels for whiskey ever, and then you just know, you know, or maybe there were like fewer companies. Probably you just got it from like a local place, right? Like
there probably wasn't as much competition. Either.
No, I don't think there's as much like shipping.
Distribution wasn't as strong.
Yeah, exactly.
We were talking this weekend about how to, like, the first bucket that humans came up with in the history of mankind, like, primitive, didn't look like a bucket, you know? It wasn't like a bucket.
Was it your hands? Is that why you were doing this?
It was like a piece of clay or something.
If only we could do this with a thing that wasn't my hands.
So the first person's just typing on the dirt, and they're like, what are you doing, Andrew Jackson? He goes, I'm the future is coming.
I'm speaking with my favorite tech company.
I think this is going to be important someday. This is going to be really big, guys. I don't even know.
My fingers.
But I do actually wonder if we ever would have ended up at the modern computer without like the Gutenberg printing press and typewriters. Like, typewriters and computing are kind of like very different processes, right? But like the fact that the two of them are kind of together, is kind of weird.
And you got that initial keyboard from the typewriter that never changed.
Right.
So I'm gonna go with his favorite tech company was a typewriter call.
My typewriter. This was probably the only tech company if they're.
Or maybe the phone company when that came around.
The Gutenberg.
So three cheers for Gutenberg.
And his printing press. And I don't know, he didn't have typewriters. He was just printing press.
The computer science, you should go to the Computer Science History Museum because they kind of jump it. But there's a little bit of like overlap where you're like, oh, typewriters, complicated mechanics. Kind of like, how do we get complicated mechanics more complicated?
Cool. It
has to be kind of computing. Which is
kind of
cool.
I should totally do that, actually. I've wondered that. I wrote, like, three book reports on Gutenberg as a kid, randomly.
Yeah.
Unrelated to anything here, but just as a random fact, but I've, like, wondered that, you know, but haven't actually bothered to ask the internet for the answer yet. Right, so I guess I'll go to a museum and turns out museums have answers.
Next time on the reactor,
next
more
time on the reactor, we find out.
And more updated history.
All right, so week three, our guest is Nate Rose.
Hey.
What's up, man?
What's going on?
So we started in the same mock group together.
Yeah.
So about a year and a
half
ago.
Mock of 2014.
Yeah. And it's been fun watching each other kind of progress into our careers.
Yeah. We definitely pivoted to different industries or like different segments in Microsoft.
Yeah.
Still doing pretty much the same thing, development.
Yeah. And so now you're doing more Azure focused. You've been heads down Azure for
Yeah, so what I do is I deal with independent software vendors. I really help them with adopting Microsoft technology. So whether that's Azure, Windows 10, Office 365, or Xbox even.
Yeah.
So with that entails like HoloLens,
right,
and the new Xbox API.
Right. And you said you're working with a group that's doing some gaming simulations.
Yeah, so here in the Bay Area, we're working with a few different startups who they're looking to do some type of stat simulation or game simulations, leveraging the cloud. So we have a new service called Azure Service Fabric that really allows gamers to have some type of manageability when it comes to having a lightweight touch when it comes to deploying high scale, high availability VM sets.
Yeah, and so you said lightweight touch, like kind of like a, I don't know how to describe it, but it is kind of like you don't want to put big pillars together, you want this kind of distributed system that you can.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. It's more essentially instead of having a VM, configuring it, having another attached VM, putting that inside an availability set, it's even going past the point of, you know, platform as a service, where it's instead of you touching parts of the VMs, instead of touching the application layer and not really configuring portions of the hardware, you're just placing your application on the VM, and the cloud provider is going to optimize it for your performance.
Right. You're kind of distributing that load efficiently. Try to make sure we're in frame. Yeah, sweet. So you were on the board a couple minutes ago, and you were explaining. What were you explaining?
So Service Fabric, so in this example, maybe I should just go directly into it. Let's say we have a game simulation. The game simulation wants to look at all your stats for a game and see what is the best optimized weaponry against a boss or against a specific level. So that's relatively lightweight when it comes to compute power. You're just putting one set against another set that's basic statistics. But you're doing that on a wide range of different, you know, matches. So how that looks like inside the Service Fabric, just go ahead.
Yeah, go for it.
So let's say we're going to have some type of logging file on your client. The logging file is just grabbing from this actual game, right?
And so they're picking up, here they're picking up all the stats about the game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So all your activities in the game and whether or not, you know, you have a specific weapon.
Okay.
If that's inside your account, that gets picked up by the logging file. This is all, you know, you could just do this and do some type of data cleansing.
Yeah.
On the client.
So the, and game, then the game will do this collecting.
Yeah.
There's no cloud here. This is just...
No cloud.
Yeah.
Cloud's over here.
Yeah. Okay.
So once we get, let's say you're done with this, with the session, we're going to upload that logging file for that particular session to, let's say, a storage inside the cloud. So this would be like Azure Blobs. So now when we sign into a web application, or let's say you sign into my service, and you're seeing all your data being presented through some type of web tier.
I think it's funny that you say web tier.
Yeah.
Like for me, that's like my whole
front end
day in, day, you know, like web tier. This is like web apps, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For the students and stuff, they're usually at this level, right? Like they're just hitting a web tier.
Yeah.
They very maybe web tier to Azure Blobs, but what we're about to go and do is very different, and I think it's kind of fun.
Yeah, yeah. So with the web tier, I mean, a lot of people, that's, you know, web dev, that's a lot of people's livelihoods, you know.
Yeah.
You could spend your entire career just in that web tier.
Yeah.
We're using it in an abstract layer as far as understanding the architecture.
Right.
Of communication between where the data is being generated to where it's being stored to where it's being communicated. So I'm a user.
Yeah.
I'm interacting with the game. And I'm viewing my stats,
okay,
on this web tier.
Right. Keep going. Just gonna zoom in a little.
So, what we're looking to introduce essentially is how do we do some type of insight or manipulation when it comes to this data or the stats that's being generated, the logs that are being generated from this game, and that's what Azure Service Fabric is being injected into this certain scenario,
yeah,
where we have a microservice inside the cloud. So this is the cloud. It looks like the ocean right now, but this is...
It could be in the ocean. You, yeah, see that? You see that video?
No.
Where they put like the data center in the ocean?
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, like Microsoft team. Like,
is it an actual thing?
They like sunk like a big old pipe of, you know, computer rack of servers.
Does it have liquid cooling?
I guess. It must be like
a cool joke.
That's, I guess, the reason.
Just open up the hatchet, just like just ocean water comes in.
I'm sure the salt's good for the motors and stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's terrible. But,
yeah, under the water.
Under the water in the cloud, ocean. And what we're going to use for this web tier, so the blob is populating, let's say, on a display front for the user, just showing you, presenting the data.
Yeah.
But now we go into a particular, this could be like a paid service, where we're going to do some additional manipulation of that,
okay,
that data.
Yeah.
So that's tier two, leads into simulation. And here we have a microservice. When I say microservice, it's just an API that you can communicate between your web tier.
Okay.
And essentially Azure Service Fabric. So you could restfully grab the metadata from your account that the user is essentially sending over to the microservice, which is Azure Service Fabric.
Okay.
And here, something interesting happens. So we're going to use, let's say, 5 gigabytes worth of data that's being sent over from the web tier. Actually, let's cross this out. So 5 gigabytes of information is being populated on the website. We don't want that to be sent over to it RESTfully, the Azure Service Fabric. That's way too big.
Yeah.
We want this to populate this entire simulation. So with Azure Service Fabric, it's highly available. You could create a threshold of how many users are inside or active inside the core sets.
Okay.
And with the core sets, let me actually go into this a little bit more. Instead of placing your application on a VM, you're placing it on nodes.
Right.
So with nodes, by default, you get three nodes. And these nodes are instances of where your application is existing on VMs that we manage.
Right.
So you don't have access to the VMs. We're optimizing the VMs to improve performance for your application. These nodes are essentially an extra layer on top of the VMs that you could place that allows you to have redundancy when it comes to your application.
Right.
And you don't have to care about these VMs at all.
Right. So this gives you almost like a falsified redundancy. The system is all in here, but we just say there's three just to make it simple?
Yeah. So we have, if I have an application, it's called the simulation, and I want to use Azure Service Fabric as the core that's running it.
Yeah.
I place it inside, I build my application inside Azure Service Fabric as an actor or a microservice, and by default, we create two different nodes in addition to the node that you're placing on,
okay,
so that when one goes down, it already exists in its stateful position or its statefulness, and another one that it's still available for it to be used.
And then in this, how many, like, what kind of virtual machines are these?
So, these are general Azure virtual machines, workables. So, you know, you have the A1 tiers. When you're using Service Fabric inside Azure, you're choosing the pricing that's same, very similar to, it's actually the same thing as a worker role.
Yeah.
You choose A1 series, you get two cores. So, it's based on how many cores you need.
Yeah.
It's the same thing as choosing your VMs.
But operating system-wise, is it?
Right now, we only support Windows.
Yeah.
And we're looking to support Linux in the future.
And so they're managing all these devices, but how do you configure all of them to work together? Do they just, how does that?
So that's what we do. We are optimizing it right here, this layer on top of the VM, so you don't have to create these. Traditionally, it would be, you know, availability sets where you have a VM communicating through different ports.
Right.
To each other. So if one fails, you fail over to another VM, and if this one fails, you fail over, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Now you don't have to do that. We create an extra layer on top of these VMs, so you have nodes. If you want to increase the number of nodes based on the amount of compute that your application's doing, then you add it. And what we do is, based on the pricing or the tier that you created for the limitation of how many cores you wanted to add to the entire microservice environment, then we increase the VMs.
And I like kind of like the physics behind it too. You've got the, where does pens go? You've got the, like, the idea of having, you know, these isolated things are all connected to, you know, they're like pebbles or, like, you know, I don't know what they are, but it seems like as soon as you go to this, where the data is able to move in this way, there are lots of different nodes in kind of like a continuous way, you come up with like a fabric. It, like, almost physically resembles a fabric in a structural kind of way.
Yeah. Those nodes. I think it's similar to thinking about, like, Docker and containers. I'm not too far, you know, involved with that space, but it's really, you know, abstract layer onto deployment, being able to create essentially a whole container of all your apps.
Right.
So whether that's an executable file or some type of database or storage, but it's all abstract, it just works together. You could pick it up and place it somewhere else. It's similar to microservices and the Azure Service Fabric, where you have these VMs. You don't have to care about where it's where it's stored at. Essentially, you just specify the data center that you want it located, the amount of cores that you want to you want obligated to it, and the amount of nodes that will be required for that compute.
Yeah, this whole this just like this chunk right here, right? I mean, that's where it's at. Like, that's the story.
Yeah. So once we send over the metadata from the web tier, so we don't want to have a lot of you know, gigabytes or byte size when we're triggering that microservice through a RESTful API.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, quick metadata. Here's my account name. Here's my account ID.
Right.
Send that over to the ASF.
Yeah.
It locates it through Azure Blob. Yeah. So we call this process hydration.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Where we, if you don't exist currently inside the service fabric, we go ahead and grab your data and your account, populate it inside the service fabric, and we run that compute.
Yeah.
So now you can create a threshold inside your application where, let's say, a user hasn't signed in for maybe a month or maybe a week.
And so it drops the hydration.
Drops it, stores it, so it's not running around as far as memory inside.
Hydration, that's, I feel like that's a really cool way to think about that, because it's kind of like that topicalness of it, where you're only thirsty when you're thirsty, and it's only when you're requiring water.
Yeah,
which is when you're at the day that when the user's requiring it, and every other time you don't need water, so you don't need hydration.
And it's cost effective, so it's big for operations.
Yeah,
kind of CTOs and COOs.
These are cheap. These are not much.
Mm-hmm.
But these, when you have
when you're running it inside memory inside microservice like this, that gets expensive.
Right. I also this whole thing, like, I can't, you know, this was the web, right? Like, that's the, you know, this is an application, right? Like, this is a website.
Yeah, so these are
serving documents.
Yeah, this is definitely web apps.
Yeah, but it's such a, like, you know, like what you said, a whole person's existence could have been in mastering this.
Yeah.
But to make this relevant now, you need something like this to engage it, or to make it like a service that's actually valuable to an application, right?
Yeah, because running this kind of simulation on Web2, you're going to see low performance, latency, lag.
Yeah.
You know, when you click the simulation button, maybe on the web app, even if you have the largest web application, so many people could be pinging it for that, or triggering that simulation inside this web tier, that we have to separate it. And now we could do it with this new technology called Service Fabric.
Right. And either the two other options for this company to do this would have been building their own servers.
Yeah.
Or, you know, having the user download some incredibly powerful simulation software.
So, yeah, we could talk about that. I mean, if they wanted to do it by themselves, they would have to create a data center. So, removing the cloud, you know, they would have to create a data center, make sure that they're
updating. And then run Azure Stack on it.
Stack on it. Yeah, exactly.
To do the service,
they wouldn't even have Service Fabric, so they would have to manage it in the traditional availability sites where you have VMs and then they fault over. Exactly.
Yeah.
Now you just manage the application. What does it do?
Yeah.
What kind of API are you using? Whether it's reliable actors, there's two different sets you could choose between in Azure Service Fabric.
Yeah.
There's actors and then there's libraries. They do. It's based on whether you want a stateful service or a stateless service.
Okay.
For this simulation, we could do it either. I would choose. I want to make sure we're making the best recommendation.
Right,
but
right.
For this simulation, you could choose either, whether it's stateful or stateless. You know, once you get all the matchmaking and stats with the weaponry, then you grab all the information and go ahead and publish that, display it inside the web app.
That's awesome. Thanks for showing that, Nate.
Yeah.
What got you interested in technology, do you think?
I think it's an enabler, you know. It's technology is the way we're going. It's allows you to do traditional tasks or professions more abstractly with the improvements and the scalability of what technology can do for those professions. So I I look at myself as just a problem solver. This is just problem solving. How do we make, you know, a game experience more efficient, you know, more beneficial for the gamer?
Yeah.
And whether that's, hey, I'm at a level and I don't know how to get past it, what weapons do I need or what weapons do I have in my arsenal to get those attack points? This is an example of problem solving.
You've enabled them.
Yeah.
If I created something that they can build on. Cool.
Yeah.
Do you have any book recommendations, video recommendations?
Book recommendations.
Or even movie recommendations.
Michio Kaku, Physics of the Future.
Okay.
That came out back in 2008, 2009.
Yeah.
He makes some pretty interesting suggestions as to where technology is going by 2100.
Yeah.
So it's great to see how we're going so far as improvement and progressing.
Right.
Here in 2016. Movies, haven't seen it really. I've seen Deadpool. Deadpool was awesome.
Oh, Deadpool was good.
Yeah. Deadpool was crazy. It was actually the highest grossing rated R movie.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. Wow. So, watch Deadpool if you're over 18.
There you are.